go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Had to get in the last swallow. Now we can go to work, right? We welcome you to Patriots Playbook for Thursday. It is game week 3 for the Pats as they get set for the Buffalo Bills this Sunday here at Gillette. 1 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. My name is John Rook. We welcome you into the program. On Thursdays, the agenda usually breaks down like this. I say usually because you never know when things could change. But on Thursdays, the agenda usually goes like this. We take your emails and your score predictions for Sunday's game. So if you've got some thoughts on just what you think the score might be, could be, should be between the Patriots and Bills on Sunday, fire them off. Fire those score predictions off. Webradio at Patriots.com. Get them in now so we can get them going. And we usually do have interviews lined up for the day as well, which we do. We'll hear the conference calls with the Buffalo Bills, with Dick Geron, the head coach, and with Marshawn Lynch, their rookie running back. That's upcoming in the program. In approximately 40 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN, their NFL research coordinator, will join us to look at the Pats and Bills and to look at week 3 around the entire National Football
League. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
Is there any reason why that's playing again, Gary?
For man coverage in the zone, they didn't have anybody throw.
Gary.
Outside on the 7 route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down.
Any reason
Sunday
why that's
game.
Playing again? Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Sorry, I was on the phone.
Obviously, I realize that people do have to work around here. Trying to get 18 things done at once. One of the hardest working guys I know. Stuff happens. Anyway. So that's the ticket for today. The other thing that we have going on today is sort of a recurrence from what we were starting yesterday. If you missed yesterday's program, I completely and totally and admittedly stole an idea from the Boston Herald, which is fine. You know, hey, we gave them full credit for this, right? But there was a newspaper article written on Wednesday talking about, you know, trying to come up with some kind of a moniker, some kind of a nickname for this suddenly potent Patriots offense. And we had a lot of great ideas, probably had well over 30 different ideas emailed in to us. In fact, it may have been more than that because there's still some emails here that we didn't get to from yesterday that I will get to today. Once again, the one thing that I do promise with this program, and I know that Fred is really good about this as well during PFW in progress, but we read your emails. Sometimes, and it's only rare, but sometimes we don't get them on simply because of the number of emails and because we have other things to get to. And in this program, we do have guests to get to. But we always read them, even if we don't get them on the air. I do the best that I can to get them on the air because, quite frankly, I think many of you share great points. You are here because you're informed and you want to stay informed, you know, and get the latest on, you know, your football team, on the Patriots in particular, at least, you know, even if they're not your football team, because I know we do get some opposing fans to tune in from time to time when it's their Patriot game week, and that's great. We appreciate it. We're glad that you logged on and sampled a little bit, and we'd love for you to participate in the show with your email and or your telephone calls. That's why we're here. However, I do the best that I can to get them all on the air, and especially when it's a good point and it brings up an issue that maybe we didn't consider when it comes down to a particular topic that we're talking about, well, then we're going to do our best to get it on the air, and that's what we're going to do here today as well. So webradio at patriots.com, the email address. You need to send us your score predictions for Sunday. By the way, I don't know right off the top here, but I don't remember the last time the Patriots were favored by as much as 16.5 in a football game. Do you? Does anybody remember the last time they were favored by this much in a football game? And let me take that a step further. Does anybody recall the last time the Patriots were favored by this much in a division game? Because I do not. Now, I've been with this franchise and associated with this team now. This is my 15th season. And quite frankly, over these 15 years, previous 14 years to this one, I do not remember ever having this large a spread, this large a Patriots spread favored. I think I can recall one or two times perhaps that they were an underdog, but never, never have I recalled that they were favored by this much, especially over a divisional opponent. Patriots, again, have never gone undefeated under Bill Belichick. You know, as good as it's been, three Super Bowls in 6 years, they have never gone undefeated within the division in a year. So, quite honestly, I think this is something we're talking about today. It is a rare feat, and it's just going to go right over everybody's heads unless we bring it up here. But I think it's something we're talking about because I think it shows you, number one, how difficult it is to win in your division when you have to play these other guys twice and to prepare and to beat somebody twice in the same season. It's difficult to do. I realize overall the record is 30 wins and 9 losses over the last few years within the division, but they have never gone through completely undefeated. It's hard to do. Now, I'm not saying that means that the loss is going to come this Sunday. I'm just saying that it's hard to do. So I'd like your thoughts on that, your score predictions for Sunday as well. And here's where we need you to vote. As we suggested on yesterday's show, I have seven candidates for a nickname for the Patriots offense. And this is in all due respect to the ones that we got late yesterday. A couple of them are kind of funny. And if you want to write in a vote, then you may write in your vote. I will allow you to do that. And if we get enough sentiment for a particular write-in vote, then that's the one that will go. But at the end of the program today, I'm going to keep the running tally here, so you need to really send off the emails. Okay? I mean, and even if you want to go to somebody else's email address and vote for the same thing twice, fine. I don't care. Just send in the votes, right? And here's the suggestion to you. Whichever one does win here, and I have kept the emails from yesterday, all right, so I know who sent in which candidates, then I'm going to pass this on, as I suggested to Fred Kirsch yesterday. I'm going to pass this on to Fred. He's going to work it into a PFW upcoming issue. We're going to refer to the Patriots offense by this nickname. We'll pass on the selection as well to the Patriots PR staff, and let's see if it catches on. Talk it up amongst your friends, your fellow fans. You can have full credit for this idea if, of course, it is your idea. And we'll see if it catches on at all. Why not? Let's have some fun with this, because this could be one of those seasons to remember. It could be. And if it is, and it turns out to be one of those, let's be at the front end of the learning curve here, right? Let's start the bandwagon rolling just a little bit. And I think this can be a fun thing to do. We'll still look at the, you know, all the issues and talk about all the negatives as well as the positives. And we'll talk to the teams on both sides. You'll hear from the players and the coaches and all that stuff like we normally do in the playbook. But got to have some fun, too. It is football, after all. Life's too short. Let's have some fun. And let's get those creative juices flowing. So here are your candidates, all right, kids? Here are your candidates that I have right now. I have seven candidates. And if you have a late write-in candidate, you may do so, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, 508-543-7482. All right? First candidate is, and these are the ones you're going to vote on. Tell me that you like or you dislike. Actually, just vote for your favorite one. That's the easiest way to go here. And we need your emails to start pouring in here. The first one is BMW for Brady Moss Welker. Which I kind of like. I think we'll probably have to play it off a little bit and say BMW, something like Precision Offense. The BMW Precision Offense. I like that one.
I think we like Toyota around here better.
Their sponsor. Yeah, well, but, you know, what I'm doing is I'm opening up another marketing opportunity for you. So, come
Toyota
on.
Toyota has exclusive rights.
No way. What happened to Ford?
Look at Christina Acker and her Toyota Tundra.
Hey, how come I don't get a Toyota Tundra? Because I'm not Christina
Acker. She doesn't have one. She just advertised it.
Oh, okay. Anyway, BMW Precision Offense. Brady's Bombers. That's another one. BB's Guns, which I happen to like personally. BB's Guns. I think that's clever. Rolling Thunder. And this is another personal favorite, although I don't think this will catch on with the marketing folks. The Wicked Pisses. That's the hell of a, but it's so Boston. It's excellent. So New England. The Boston TD Party. T being TEA, Boston TD Party, the firing squad. Okay? Patriots, the firing squad. So those are the seven that I have. Somebody also sent in Patriot missiles, but I'm not so sure that would go over real well considering past history with this franchise. But anyway, I got a nice chuckle out of it. That's thanks to Tim in Dallas for that one. The Patriot missiles. Do I need to explain about that one? Okay, didn't think so. So anyway, there are your candidates for the offense's nickname. Send me your favorite. Send me your vote for which ones you like. And we'll repeat this periodically through the program today for those that may be logging in late or not knowing what's going on or what we're talking about. But, again, voting on the nickname for the Patriots offense. BMW Precision Offense, Brady's Bombers, BB's Guns, Rolling Thunder, Wicked Pisses, Boston TD Party, Firing Squad. Those are the ones that made the cut from yesterday. Webradio at patriots.com. Tell me which one you like. 508-543-7482, and we'll keep it updated for you. All right? Let's see if we can get in some of these emails that you took the time to get into. For those that did not get a chance to get theirs read or discussed during PFW in progress today, we will, again, have Russell Baxter coming up in about 30 minutes. And then in the second hour of our program today, we'll hear from Dick Giron of Buffalo and Marshawn Lynch, the Bills rookie running back, coming up later in the program. And then, of course, time permitting, we'll also get to you to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. This one comes from Ray, who says, first time writing into the show. Just want to say what a fantastic job you guys do bringing info to the fans of the Patriots. Just one point, though. Instead of talking about a 16-0 season, shouldn't you be saying 19-0? Did you forget about a little thing called the playoffs and Super Bowl? Technically, yeah, you're right. But I think so much emphasis was put on the fact that the Dolphins went 14-0 in the regular season and won three playoff games to go 17-0 through overall. Yes, I think we realize it should be ultimately 19-0. But nobody's completed an undefeated regular season since those very same 72 Dolphins. So you got to win the 16 before you get to the 19. He says his suggestion for the nickname, simple and to the point, the Super Bowl Express. Or how about the Everybody Scores offense? Okay, fair enough. Consider them written in, Ray. Thank you for the email. It's an editorial comment from Gary Gradecki. Pat in Minnesota. I think we said this one yesterday, Pat. Razor Precision, one game at a time. Okay? This is from Gain in North Yarmouth, Maine. Guys, I really like your coverage of Videogate this past week or so. I think that Belichick is still the best coach of all time, regardless of whatever videotapes he has compiled of opposing coaches. You mentioned that a prominent Boston athlete was a client of a pharmacy that got busted for steroid distribution. This doesn't bother me at all. I accept that almost all athletes are doing something to gain a competitive advantage, whether it's steroids, HGH, or whatever. I would only be disappointed if this athlete turned out to be Tom Brady, as he is my favorite athlete, would want his legacy to be tarnished. Well, then, why then would you care if another Patriot would have his legacy tarnished? I mean, he's still on the same team as the as Tom Brady. I don't quite understand that reasoning. On a more important note, I've been surprised by how well-spoken Fred has been lately. In the last few episodes of PFW in Progress, I've noticed that I'm not only understanding what Fred is trying to say, but agreeing with a lot of it.
I think that says more about you.
What, about me or about him?
About the emailer. Oh. He's agreeing with Fred.
Okay. I think we'll leave enough said, right? Roger sends, maybe it's late, but I have a few more. Offense, BB's Babies. On defense, BB's Wrecking Crew. Thank you, Roger. Let's see. We have Joyce in Dracut, Massachusetts, who says, my suggested nickname for the offense would be OMD, Offense of Mass Destruction. We also had that as a suggestion yesterday, Weapons of Mass Destruction. The WMD, Patriot Offense, Weapons of Mass Destruction. So she says OMD. Weapons of Mass Destruction doesn't accurately describe the team nature and impact of the contribution made by the O-line, the blockers, as well as Brady and his offensive weapons. Offense of Mass Destruction better describes the effect the entire unit has on our ability to score. Thank you, Joyce. Appreciate that. Let's see what else we have. Shannon. Long time no hear from, which I'm sure Sawyer has had no problem with. It's been a long offseason out here in West. Out west, got married, went to Puerto Vallarta, flipped and completely totaled my truck. Ah, Shannon, I'm glad to hear everything's okay.
Get a Tundra.
Yeah, no kidding. Get something, but, you know, geez, Take it easy out there. Anyways, exactly how bloodied and bludgeoned is the horse outside of Gillette Stadium? Can't wait till next season when we finally stop hearing about this cheating BS and put this dead horse to rest. We'll hear about it during the game again this week, next Monday night, next Jets Pats, start of the playoffs, 2 weeks prior to the Super Bowl, during the Super Bowl, and finally over and over again during the 08 draft. Good grief, Charlie Brown. But you know what? Bring it on, because the Pats look like or look fan-effing-tastic. Please tell Ellis Hobbs that the Cyclones can kiss my white, shiny butt. Iowa State, just a bunch of pig farmers wearing ketchup and mustard clown suits who get lucky every now and again to beat Iowa. Go Hawkeyes. But more importantly, go Patriots. Keep up the good work. Ellis, no hard feelings. You pig farmer, you. Wow, Shannon. Just, you know, show a little emotion in your emails, right? Good to hear from you again, though. Take it easy. Jay in Panama City, Florida. Guys, just started listening to the program last week. What linebacker has the longest remaining contract, and for how long? How long do you think Teddy, Rodney, and Vrabel will wait to retire? Longest remaining contract. Linebacker-wise, now this is, again, I'm going off the top of my head because they don't really do a whole lot of contract revealing here around these parts. And if you've been around this franchise or followed it very long for Jay, that you know that they're not too terribly revealing. My guess would have to be it'd be a Dalis Thomas. Has to be, because he's the new one in. That has to be it. And how long do I think Teddy, Rodney, and Vrabel will wait to retire? They will retire whenever they feel like they can't go anymore, and each player has said as such. Whenever they feel like they cannot sufficiently contribute to the program, they'll move on. Now, Teddy, obviously, a couple of years ago when he went through his stroke, you would think that he might be a little bit more willing to pull the trigger. Rodney, I think it really depends on how he comes back when he does come back from his suspension. Vrabel has given no hints at all as to his readiness or willingness to retire. And the way that the Patriots have helped themselves with depth in the linebacking core, and the way that they play their system, nobody has to stay out there for, you know, even two or three series in a row. You know, that's going to elongate, that's going to lengthen these guys' career. You know, they can stay on as long as they want. It may not be the answer that you wanted to hear, but honestly, I don't think anybody's thinking about that right now. He says, I gave 21 points on the Chargers game for 4-1 odds and did well. You sure did. There are a few sure things in sports betting. Last week was, and so was Holyfield Tyson won. Good job, Jay. Good job out of you. Sam from Denmark. Hello, Sam. Talking about hypothetical replacements for BB, and I don't know why we'd be talking about that, would Norm Chow be a possibility? He is probably a bit old, in my opinion, but he is Chinese. The Crabs have a lot of business in China. How, on the other hand, how about Josh McDaniels? Well, look, if you're believing what Greg Easterbrook, and I'm guessing that's what you're talking about, his column on ESPN.com, which is absolutely one of the biggest bunches of nonsense that I've ever read in my entire life. And I don't like Greg Easterbrook to begin with. I didn't like him when he was a columnist on NFL.com, and I think he knows less about football than most columnists slash bloggers out there. Honestly. He's stirring dirt up, and he's doing it just to be a contrarian here. So please understand that. Bill Belichick, and it's been reported not only here, but in the Boston media as well, and put out nationally last weekend, has apparently signed a contract extension through 2013. So where's he going, and who's going to let him go? And the second you do let him go, don't think for a minute that he doesn't get snapped up. So quit the nonsense, okay? Quit the nonsense. Thomas says, Belichick's boys, B-O-Y-Z. Randy Moss referred in a locker room interview, he would not be happy until he was out there with the boys, B-O-Y-Z. So Belichick's boys. That's close. That's a little hip. You know, I can understand that. That's why I think my own personal favorite is BB's guns. Because everybody in offense is potentially a weapon. All guns. And BB has obviously shown a little support for Bill Belichick. And, of course, BB's guns is a play on a BB gun. So that's my own personal favorite. That's the one that I'm voting for. You, of course, can vote for your own if you don't like that one. Boris says, after two games without Seymour, are you ready to call him an overrated, overpaid defensive end? Does that give you my opinion, Boris? I think the jury is still out, but it is not looking good. What are you talking about, Boris? What in the world are you talking about? What are you looking at? Richard Seymour is a Pro Bowl player. What this shows is that the Patriots have depth and talent on the defensive front. Please, what do you mean the jury is still out? Out on what? His ability to play? Well, then you don't know very much about football. Matt says, fans and media perception of what the Pats got caught doing. Oh, he sent me the YouTube. I'll check it out later, Matt. Thank you. David from the Philippines. Hello, Dave. Hey, we kind of hit the run the gamut here on world locations. We had Bogota, Colombia check in yesterday. We've had the Philippines. We've had Denmark.
It's a benefit of the World Wide Web. It's everywhere.
I guess that's true, huh? I guess that's what World Wide Web really means, right, Jason? Okay. Anyway, he says, guys, regarding Samuel not starting, it may not have anything to do with Samuel at all. Maybe it's more of a reward for Randall Gay for playing well for this year. Besides, every bit of experience Gay gets will make him that much better if Samuel or Hobbs get hurt. This is true, but I do believe that it's simply because Samuel came in late and he still has to get into football playing shape. He missed all of training camp. You can do all the working out that you want to on your own. It is not the same as going through camp. It is not the same as getting reps and putting on your pads and trading blows with the receivers or the running backs or anybody else. It's not the same. Now, he's catching up rather quickly. It's probably a little bit of both. One, because they liked Randall Gay when he burst onto the scene a couple of years ago and played for the Super Bowl team. And, of course, he's been hurt. And so he's had an opportunity to step back into his role because there's an opportunity there. The opportunity presenting itself was Asante Samuel wasn't here. Now that Samuel's back, they've already made the move. Samuel's got to earn the time back. I think that's a fair way to do it. Jim in New Jersey. Speaking of the NFL on HBO last night, is there any history between Collinsworth and the Patriots and or Belichick? I mean, he was ridiculously harsh on the whole football in America pregame on Sunday. Well, and it says here, and yesterday he was the only one of the panel who didn't want to let the whole Cameragate thing drop. While Marino and Carter were talking about the SD San Diego, the San Diego New England game itself and the Patriots team, you could just see Collinsworth was in a bad mood, making several almost under his breath comments about videotape and how there should be a further investigation to the Patriots, i.e. miking defensive players. I'm not aware that there's any history. Other than the fact that he played for Cincinnati and Belichick coached Cleveland. I don't know. I'm not aware that there's any history. I think that Chris Collinsworth primarily, and this is without his comments one way or the other on the Patriots, you know, I think he was a very good wide receiver when he played, but I think mostly he's a sanctimonious, pompous ass on the radio, on the television. You know, and he sets himself to be, you know, all-knowing and all-seeing. And, you know, I don't really have any use for Chris Collinsworth. You know, if you're going to purport to be an analyst and or an expert, and you are an ex-player, then you better bring some serious, expertise into the fray, into the discussion. He doesn't really do that. He complains. He whines. He says something is bad, and he doesn't generally, not all the time, but generally does not back it up. Listen to the guy. If you can stand it, listen to him. And he just comes across as sanctimonious and full of himself. He doesn't come across as a likable guy on the air at all. Now, Tiki Barber may be full of crap. You know, his early reviews are that, you know, he's certainly not shy about, you know, speaking his mind. But Tiki comes across as a likable guy. I don't know why. He's just got that certain something-something. Collinsworth doesn't have that. Collinsworth comes across to me as a pencil-neck geek. I don't know. You got any thoughts? And maybe he does have a grudge. I don't know. But, you know, for him to suggest that should be a further investigation into the Patriots is ludicrous. If you're going to further investigate the Patriots, as we've discussed on this program and we've discussed on Patriots.com radio and has been discussed many, many other times, certainly talk shows around New England, you're going to put the Patriots under the microscope any further, you got to put the rest of the league under the microscope. And I think the league has got to begin understanding that. And I think they do. And they might just do that. But the Patriots aren't the only ones here because there's been so much talk about other teams. They would not be doing their duty. They'd be derelict in those duties if they didn't look at somebody else. As I said, I am a firm believer in where there's smoke, there's fire. I personally think Chris Collinsworth has got something to hide, but that's just me. I tuned in late, so I don't know if you guys covered this or not. Yes, it's the article from Greg Easterbrook. Okay, thank you, Jose. He says that Easterbrook says that Belichick has doomed the NFL. He won't last the year. If further investigation finds that the Patriots cheated during the Super Bowl, it'll destroy the NFL game and make it lose its popularity. We've checked it out. Thank you, Jose. And it's nothing but complete and utter trash. I suggest that you write him and tell him that, because he's writing for a specific reason, to get under our skin and to be a contrarian. And that's what a lot of columnists do. A lot of columnists write garbage to be a contrarian. So you will write in. So you'll read their stuff. So we'll talk about it. I'm not talking about it anymore because it's trash. Let's see. Ray sends his prediction in for this Sunday. The Super Bowl Expresses next stop will be 46-12 on Sunday against Buffalo. All right, so Ray sends in his email and his score prediction, 46-12. Okay, thank you. Sean, he says that I got a name for the Pats defense. Silver Bullet. Great plug for the Coors beer commercial. Or Big Blue. Or Big Blue Train. Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Sean. BB's Guns Rocks, says Stephanie. Thank you, Stephanie. Says a Patriot fan living in Packerland. All right, so we get one from the hinterlands of Green Bay today. Appreciate that, Stephanie. Thank you very much. That's a good one. So we have another vote for BB's Guns. That's good. Offense nickname, Ted, from Franklin, Mass. Says, sorry, I still like the Brady Bunch. I don't know. Should we throw that in there? That's just been done. I mean, Ted, I understand everybody likes Brady's Bunch or whatever because it's a play on the sitcom, but I don't know. I don't know. I get this vision of Marsha, every time I hear that, you know. And while that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I think most men my age had a crush on her. Maureen, what was her last name?
McCormick.
McCormick, thank you. Most people my age, most males my age had a crush on Maureen McCormick back in the 70s. Admit it. You know you did.
I just heard on the radio this morning that she's actually coming out with a book called Here's the Story.
Really? Yeah. Didn't she and Barry Williams had a thing for her, and then she spurned him, and so Barry Williams had an affair with Florence Henderson, something like that? I'm sure that Maureen will discuss that in her book, right?
You're going way over my Barry knowledge.
I know. You're too young. You don't know. It's over your head. Shoom. Oh, that's some good stuff there. Come on. Barry Williams, yeah. I saw the movie. They even did a movie on what was really like of the Brady Bunch, and that, you know, Barry Williams did ask, you know, Florence Henderson out. They dated, apparently, for a brief while, even though she was old enough to be his mom. Barry Williams is my age. Actually, I think he's a year or two older. I know Maureen McCormick, I think, is a year or two older. I can't believe she'd be close to turning 50.
Hey, boss, you're a loser.
Thank you. Okay, anyway, Ted says, still like Brady Bunch. It's about sweeping the division. Yes, it is tough to do, but winning a Super Bowl is tough to do, and before 2001, the Patriots had not done that either. And how about winning 21 in a row? You would think that would be tougher than sweeping your division. Patriots did that one, too. Yes, Ted, but they have not swept the division in any year. So that ought to exactly tell you how tough that is to do. They've done the other things. They haven't done that one thing. And so they've got to win this weekend in order to be able to, again, take the next step towards sweeping the division in a single year. Tough to do. Brian in Buffalo. Hey, Brian. Thanks. Appreciate it. He says he thinks the Bills win. Score prediction, 20-16 Bills. We would expect nothing less from someone from Buffalo, but that's okay. It's part of the conversation. He says, I think the Patriots' long ball to Moss will be taken out by the Bills' defense. Maroney will have a solid game running, but the Bills being such an underdog will give them an edge to win. Those with the least expectations should be feared the most. The Bills' special teams, along with Lynch and Reed and Evans, will test the Patriots' number one defense. For those that think I'm crazy, two games are not enough to start any bandwagon. Bills are the number one upset team who can suck one week and destroy the next. Remember, 31-0 against the Pats in the Bills' home opener? Yeah, I think we all remember that. Ain't going to happen this week, though, Brian. But thanks for chiming in anyway. I'll tell you what, Brian. Okay, I'll make you a deal because I know you're listening, so I'll cut you a deal here, all right? First of all, you got to realize that the spread is 16.5, all right? I asked the question off the top of the program. Does anybody remember the last time the Patriots were favored by anybody, much less a division opponent, by that much in a single week? I don't remember it in the 15 years that I've been with this team. Don't remember it. So that ought to be significant enough, number one. Number two, I would tell you that the Patriots will have a hard time covering that spread. I realize all the PFW guys went one way and took the Patriots and the points. I think it will be difficult for the Patriots to cover the spread. And if I were a betting man, and I'm not, but if I were, I would tend to take the Bills and the points in this one just because of the enormity of the spread. A lot of things have to happen. A lot of things have to happen right for the Patriots to be out there and cover the spread. I mean, you're talking about two touchdowns and a field goal. So you got to be up 17-0 before you're even. That's a lot. And I think the Bills would have to turn the ball over. The Patriots would probably have to get a special teams win, maybe even have to get a defensive touchdown in order to make something like that happen. So, I'm kind of tending to lean toward, the Bills in that particular regard. I do think the Patriots will win the game, but I'm not so sure about the cover. Anyway, Brian, I appreciate your taking the opportunity and having the courage to write into the program and giving us your prediction of the Bills 20, Patriots 16 on Sunday. John in Toronto says, Pat's double-fisted mean machine for the offense and defense. Got a lot of write-ins here, but no other votes for other nicknames. Thomas sends in his prediction. Bills 17, Pats 38. Excellent job. Excellent job. And let's see, we got Thomas also sends Brady's long balls. Says, can you send me a Maroney jersey? I can afford it, we can afford it. No. I believe there's something called PatriotsProShop.com, something like that here on the website that you can go right to get that jersey yourself. I'm sure that's a possibility. Howard in Orange, Connecticut sends, okay, so Gillette isn't spelled correctly. That said, I like Brady's Bombers and BB's Guns. As for this week, Pat's by a whole bunch. He says 42-10 is his score prediction. As the little juggernaut rolls on and over the Buffalo Bills, I still believe the bump in the division will most likely occur in Miami if it happens at all. Other bumps, Colts, the Steelers, maybe the Ravens, but not likely. They just can't score points with that offense regardless of who is the quarterback. That's absolutely correct, Howard. We spent a little bit of time in yesterday's program talking, and actually on Tuesday's program, specifically talking about where you think the potential pratfall could come on this schedule. And I think the general consensus was there are two spots for the first one. I'm not talking about eventually, but the first one. There's some sentiment for, obviously, week six at Miami, simply because of the whole thing that led us to today's discussion. And that is, of course, when was the last time, the Patriots had never been undefeated in within the division. So when was the last time they were favored by this much over division team? So it could come at Miami because, quite frankly, the Patriots traditionally, historically, have problems in Miami, no matter how good or bad the Dolphins are. You know it, and I know it. If you follow this team for any length of time, you know that to be fact. The other one, of course, would have to be in Week 10 against the Colts on November the 4th. I think those are the two most likely stumbling blocks. If they get by Miami in a couple of weeks, then obviously I think they can get all the way to Week 10 and they can go into that Colts game 9-0 and think about the hype. Think about the hype that week. The NFL will be dancing on it. We'll be dancing on it. You'll be dancing on it. Everybody will be dancing on it and talking about it being a potential, AFC championship game preview. And, wow, isn't it a shame this couldn't be the real Super Bowl because clearly these are the two best teams of the NFL this year and all that kind of stuff. That will be huge. And I think there's a very good chance that we get to that point and that the loser is going to have its first blemish. I think that's not only possible, I think it's likely. But there are a couple of spots for both teams. As we've talked about, that they could conceivably take a little bump in the road beforehand. Howard, thank you. Nicknames. Kenneth sends in his votes for the nicknames. Ken in Huntington Beach, California says nicknames. BB's Guns is definitely the best submission, though I do like the OMD improvement to my WMD suggestion from yesterday, offensive mass destruction, as opposed to WMD, weapons of mass destruction. Yes, I'd like to make a push for the perfect swarm defensive nickname that a mailer came up with yesterday. I thought that was great, regionally appropriate, and fitting. All right, well, I haven't given much thought to the defense, and quite frankly, I think it's because right now the defense is still in a bit of state of flux until we get guys like Seymour and Harrison back on that side of the ball. But we could go ahead and start talking about defense. Perfect swarm is a good one. Obviously, it's a regionally appropriate thing on the play on words of the movie Perfect Storm about the Gloucester fishermen. So, okay. George Clooney's movie, right? Ken says, Bill score, 21 Patriots, 3 Bills. If the Chargers make the red zone twice, the Bills won't make it in more than once, and they won't score a touchdown off of it. The only way the score is closer is if the Patriots start playing their second team in positions. The Bills are better than they've been given credit for being. They did give Denver a game, but I also believe that's because Denver is a little overrated. And Schoble does give Brady problems. And we talked about that yesterday with Mark Kelso, who's on the Bills radio network here. And we did stress that Aaron Schoble is Tom Brady's perhaps worst nemesis. With all due respect to Jason Taylor of Miami, I think the Patriots have as much problem, if not more problem, with a guy like Schoble trying to block him as they do with Jason Taylor. However, Ken says the spread will be covered and the Patriots will never be in danger of losing the game. So he says 21-3. On Collinsworth, he is a self-righteous ass. I believe that's exact. It's almost the way I think I called him a pompous ass. Is that anything close to self-righteous ass? Pompous and self-righteous, that's fairly close, right?
I think it can be.
Yeah, I think it can be, too. Anyway, Ken says, I've never liked him. He always hounds anyone involved in any sort of controversy and rarely says anything intelligent. I really wish he'd just get off TV. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. When you start whining, your usefulness as an analyst is over. And believe you me, there are several other athletes, ex-football players, that do at least as good, if not better, job than Chris Collinsworth. So I think Chris is coasting a little bit. Frankly, I'm going to wager here that many of you who are listening to this program right now don't remember him much as a player. I do, because I'm old enough. Jason, do you remember Chris Collinsworth as a player for Cincinnati?
No.
Okay. Enough said. McNabb's comments. Just like they did with Spygate, the media made way too much of a big deal out of McNabb's statements. Well, I don't really agree with his point of view. I do agree with him when he said that the media took him out of context and really blew the event up. He's talking about McNabb talking about how black quarterbacks have a tougher time than white quarterbacks in the NFL. If you didn't see that, he mentioned that on HBO's, it wasn't on Bryant Gumbel's show, right? I believe it was. Anyway, when will the media settle down and stop over-sensationalizing things? And since when did a gunpoint robbery in Vegas like O.J. Simpson deserve 24/7 coverage for an entire week? Well, I understand a little bit about that, Ken, but O.J. Simpson is a larger-than-life individual, and I think he sometimes does feel the need to get exposure and to get something going for himself, any kind of run, as sick as it may be. I think he's one of those narcissistic people that likes the spotlight and revels in it, no matter the situation. Thank you for the comments, Ken, and he does definitely puts out another vote for BB's guns. Here we go. Thomas says, I vote for Wicked Pissa Patriots. He says, hey, how about a gift certificate to the Pro Shop? This guy's angling for free stuff here. What's up with that? Thomas, I mean, you know, according to your signature on your email here, says that you're an analyst for Integrated Defense Logistics. I won't say where, but, you know. Come on, you got to be making big bucks. Spend some of them. I unfortunately am not. I'm not charged with the ability here to award somebody with the winning name here a free gift certificate or anything like that. That's not up to me. I might be able to get the winner a free subscription to PFW, but I have to clear that with Kirsch first because he's the boss. Artie says, John, are you looking for the name for the entire team or just the offense? Guns sounds like it's just the offense. I'd say if we are talking about the balanced team, offense and defense, how about they call themselves a family, how they stick together? Why not simply BB's boys? Well, I hadn't really considered just the team because I thought maybe this was an opportunity to sort of market a particular aspect of the team and to have some fun with the fact that I'm not so sure right now that there's a defense that can stop this offense. I think they can stop themselves on occasion. But, you know, when the talk starts to center around, and we've heard this over the first couple of weeks here, the talk centers around giving opposing defensive coordinators nightmares. I think the focus really is kind of like on the offense for now anyway. But it's something we could certainly entertain. BB's gun still would be my favorite. Nick writes, all those things you stated that had to happen for the Pats to cover the spread, did you not see them happen last Sunday night? Pats 42, Bills 17. Absolutely, Nick. You bet I saw it. This, just because they happened last week, though, doesn't mean they're going to happen this week, whether the opponent is inferior or not. I mean, come on. Did you ever play football, Nick? You know that, you know, things change from week to week. It does not matter. That's why you play the game, because it just simply doesn't matter who it is. Things can change, you know, from week to week, and really the opponent doesn't matter. Who knows how charged up the Bills will be? Who knows if the Patriots somehow, you know, don't have their thinking caps on and leave the ball on the ground? Or maybe they, you know, they get a pass picked off. I mean, things change. It doesn't matter the relative strength of the opponent. The NFL is balanced, period. I mean, the Bills don't look to be pretty good, don't look to be good at all on offense right now. But, you know, if you throw one away or you give a team good field position and they take advantage of a mistake, which, of course, you can make because you're human after all, anybody can take advantage. So just because the Patriots ran all over San Diego last week, it doesn't necessarily mean they will run all over Buffalo, although the odds makers seem to think that right now based on previous performance, because that's all you have to base the odds on, previous performance. And I think 17 points is just a tremendous spread. You don't see many games like that in the league. You just don't. Well, let's talk a little numbers, shall we? Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joined us now as he does each and every Thursday. Russell, when was the last time you saw a spread that large, especially in an intradivisional game? 17 points is
enough. Oh, boy,
stands,
I did rack my brain on a divisional game. I remember, I want to say 2 years ago, Indy-San Francisco was a pretty high spread, which turned out to be Alex Smith's first start. You know, we had a large spread in the Super Bowl when San Francisco played San Diego. But that is so strictly based on what the Patriots have come out of the gate, and how the Bills have struggled to put points on the board. Of course, the game being, in Foxborough.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, you know, I think what would probably be even more interesting, John, is how the point spread would be with the Patriots against the rest of the AFC East this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look at it, and I guess we're having fun with numbers.
Absolutely,
but,
like we always do.
Yeah, the Pats have scored 76 points in two games.
Right.
They're 2-0.
Right.
The rest of the division has scored 77 points in six games.
Total.
And they're 0-6.
Total, right.
So maybe that's what it's based on. Maybe it's based on the fact that people aren't putting much stock into the division. But I heard your comments just as I was coming on and so on. And it doesn't take long in this league to put the ball on the ground two or three times and all of a sudden the game get away from you, regardless of where the game is played. Case in point, Carolina Panthers last week against the Houston Texans.
Right.
Cruising at 14-0, and before they knew it, they were down by 20.
Which was shocking, by the way.
Yeah, yes, it was. And I'm one of those people who likes Houston as an improved team and actually picked them second in the AFC South. And then very intriguing game with the Colts this week. But, you know, when you get your foot on someone's throat at home and you can drain them of their confidence, a little perplexing by the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, they didn't seize that moment. And here come the Houston Texans. So it can happen, and it doesn't matter if it's at home or away. Sometimes playing at home lies you. You get into a state of being so comfortable when you're cruising along, suddenly a team can sneak up on you.
Right, no doubt. We've had some fun email-wise over the last couple of days. I want to get your input on this, just, you know, for grins and giggles here, as long as we're having fun. And we decided to come up with a nickname for this Patriots prolific offense thus far. See if we can pass it on to the marketing folks and if it catches on. So of these selections, which one do you kind of lean toward, all right? BMW for Brady Moss Welker, the BMW Precision Offense, Brady's Bombers, BB's Guns, Rolling Thunder, the Wicked Pisses. That's a little Boston for you there. The Boston TD Party.
Okay.
Or the Firing Squad.
Some are very masochistic.
That's how we are around here.
Yeah, it's very true. you know, the firing squad's kind of intriguing because it has a sense of there's a sense of probably using the word the wrong way.
Yeah.
But what has been the best part about the Patriots so far is their execution.
Oh, another play on words.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. You could call them the executioners.
There you go. So the firing squad could be
all right.
the firing squad with the a tagline. We could call them the firing squad because they excelled in execution.
Yeah, I liked it. Okay, I liked it. So Russell votes for the firing squad.
Whoever called this in, they do understand whoever wrote this in, whoever this young man or young woman was.
Yes,
that it's 40% for you and I.
Yeah.
Each.
Yeah.
And 20% for coming up with the original idea. That's just
absolutely
the nuts and bolts of how it works.
Absolutely. Of course.
Those are numbers I can do.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair. What were your overall impressions on the Patriots and the Chargers last week? And you know, and I say that only because I know that you sort of tended to favor San Diego going into the matchup, and now and I'm not trying to throw you under the bus here, but I'm just saying that I thought that the Patriots were about as dominant once again as I have seen them in a long time, and it clearly shows you that the Patriots know how to use emotion and put it to a positive use.
Yeah, and, you know, yes, and I was one of those people who thought, and it had nothing to do with the event, as I prefaced last week, it had nothing to do with the events of why I like San Diego. But, I think I'm going to have to rethink San Diego as a team entirely, because that physical play that we saw from them last year, especially with the aggressiveness of Sean Merriman, Sean Phillips, that defensive unit that could be had and was had in the playoffs last year against New England, mm-hmm. It was non-existent. And it seemed like once Philip Rivers made an early mistake, all the air went completely out of the San Diego Chargers. And that was a little perplexing to me. Again, the Patriots, I thought, flawed execution. But I thought the turning point clearly in the game was once San Diego scored in the third quarter, and they got a fumble on the kickoff. I guess there's a video of Bill Belichick who was berating his defense after the drive. He came back, and they came in with a great stop, which included back-to-back sacks. And that really was all she wrote.
Yeah, it was 24-7. 24-7, Patriots lose the football, and they come in and they get two huge sacks and just squelch all the life out of
absolutely. It's real easy for a game to go, once a game gets within 10 points, it's easy for a game sometimes to kind of let slip away from it. But the Patriots would have none of it. Their defense looked helpless the entire evening. They made some plays, but they didn't make nearly enough plays. And, you know, the Chargers, along with a couple other teams in this league who had big years last year, have come out of the gates noticeably flat, John. And I'm not sure what that's attested to. Is that the test of not playing a lot in preseason? Is it a chance of lofty expectations? It's one thing to come in.
Is it Norv Turner?
It's a big year for Norv in the sense that, you know, I'm one of those people willing to give him a pass in his years with the Raiders because no one's winning there.
Right.
He did an adequate job in Washington, although the owner, I think, derailed him at the end. But the problem is if he goes to a third place and does not succeed, then it's just not going to bode well for him. So the Raiders thing, I think, is an asterisk for now because who is one? I mean, the Raiders, since going to the Super Bowl, 15-51. Okay, so they've lost a lot of games regardless of who the coach has been there.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Eagles are another team that's come out of the gate noticeably flat. And I'm not just saying that because of their 0-2. I look at the New York Giants. The New York Giants are 0-2, but at least they've come up with a little life. Okay, they got outscored in the first game, and their defense eventually crumbled in the second game, but at least they played late. The New York Jets are 0-2. They were overwhelmed the first week, but the second week, their young quarterback had a lot of spark in him and down the stretch. But the teams like San Diego and Philadelphia and New Orleans have really come out almost lifeless the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah. I guess I'm having a hard time coming to grips with why teams come out as flat as they do early in the year and if why they are somewhat, it's a good word for it, tepid.
Laissez-faire?
yeah. That's even better.
That's French for flat.
Yeah, I realize that. That's good.
I
realize
love when
that.
You speak
that's
French,
very good. Thank you very much. But why is that? Have we been able to figure this out? Does it have to do with the coaches? Does it have to do with expectations? Does it have to do with maybe these teams have early injuries? Why do you think that is?
I think, you know what? I mean, I felt this in recent years. Okay. I also think it's why home field advantage has kind of suffered. This is going to maybe sound like an odd comment, But because of the enormous scrutiny that you're under with sports these days, you know, the media, the talk shows, the radio shows, the bloggers, the columns, the constantness, you know, teams that are expected to win, there's no real joy in it anymore. There's real no sense of satisfaction to a sense because the surrounding people, it is for the people who win the games, but the surrounding people, I think they almost make you feel like if you don't win, okay, if you don't win, it's a disaster. If you do win, it was expected, okay? And I think that pressure plays on the teams that are expected to win and works to the advantage of the teams that are not expected to win.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that.
Which makes teams like the Colts and the Patriots, to a degree Pittsburgh, they had an off year last year, Philadelphia had an off year in 05. The consistent winners in the National Football League probably makes it even more impressive that they don't have that many bumps in the road.
Very true. Very true. Let's take a look at some potential bumps in the road in week three, shall we?
We shall.
Okay. I want to start off then within the division because this is the battle for second place right now. Miami at the New York Jets, and which team actually gets its first win of the year? And is it just as simple to say the Jets should win this at home, or does Miami give them a battle on the road?
Well, it's tempted to say the Jets would win this just on the premise of home, you would think the Jets. I go more on the premise of the fact that the Jets have beaten them 14 of the last 18 times they played them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like no matter who it is. And for a long time, it was a great matchup of Kevin Mawai, who's now in Tennessee, getting all over Zach Thomas. Now I guess it's going to be Nick Mangold who gets all over Zach Thomas. They always seem to be able to block him and Jason Taylor. They have limited those two guys in making enormous big plays. The Jets swept them last year, big win on Christmas night last year that really propelled them into getting into the playoffs. You had to like what you saw out of Kellen Clemens late in the game last week. You probably didn't like what you had to see in Justin McCarron's, who dropped a sure touchdown pass last week. The Jets seem like they have a little spark. Their defense has been a little shaky. The Dolphins' defense has been okay. You know, I know they gave up 37 points last week, but I think that was also based on the fact that their quarterback threw four interceptions,
mm-hmm.
set up the Cowboys with a lot of decent field position. That being said, until Miami gets its offensive line straightened out and they can maintain any kind of clock control, I got to go with the opposition. I lean toward the Jets.
Okay, yeah. And on top of that, they're at Giant Stadium in this one, so it's a home game. A lot of intriguing battles this week and some interesting matchups and some matchups I think that are actually kind of tough to pick. I've struggled a little with this one, although I obviously lean one way or the other, but it's intriguing the fact that San Francisco is off to a 2-0 start, one of the wins on the road, and they got to play at Pittsburgh on Sunday afternoon. And I wonder, just out of curiosity, do you give San Francisco any shot in this one?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I think what we saw out of the 49ers, I mean, and you know, you go back and you look at teams that are up and comers, and you always go back and look at a game. And we're going to get—I know you're going to ask me about a particular game, so I'll get to it.
Yeah.
But you go back and look at last year, and I know the fact that the Niners were able to sweep Seattle, who won the division, but even more so, going the last week of the season into Denver and knocking the Denver Broncos out of the playoffs in overtime. It's one of those jumping off games for this team. Now, they have not played particularly well out of the gate. You know, their defense has been better. They gave up a lot of yards last week, but it was bend, not break. That has really been the story of their defense so far, and they spent a lot of money on that defense with Nate Clements and Tully Bandicane and some of their other acquisitions that they fashioned to 3-4. They did get a blow, though, with second-year linebacker Manny Lawson, who a lot of people like, including myself. But it looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season. Offensively, they've kind of stubbed their toes out of the gates, but they got a late drive from Alex Smith. They get a lot of tough running from Frank Gore. Their offensive line is better. Yeah, I think they do have a chance here. You know, Pittsburgh, I know a lot of people have jumped on, you know, 34-7, 26-3.
Yeah.
But I don't think their offense has played particularly well. They've been very timely on third down and made plays when necessarily. But to me, they're still a little too much throwing to set up the run rather than the other way around. Now, their defense has been incredibly aggressive and has really gotten back to that physical style of play that I thought was very, very evident in the 2005 playoffs. And last year was, you know, virtually non-existent, I thought, the first half of the year. That being said, you know, the Niners have shown some cracks on defense. This is a chance, I think, for Pittsburgh to establish a run. But I agree with you. One of very many intriguing games this year. I think Pittsburgh finds a way to win, but it is going to be far from easy.
Yeah, a little closer maybe than thought. The other intriguing game has to do with the Colts and the Texans, and the fact that Houston is 2-0 now for the first time in franchise history. You've already spoken about how they jumped on Carolina after being in the hole early last week, which I thought was very impressive, and frankly, I think that's a signature win for that franchise in Houston. I think that's probably their best win since they, you know, came into being. And you got to wonder, because they're in that division, whether or not they can mount some kind of a challenge to the Colts.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on the signature win as far as the team, because I'm going to go back to week 16 of last year when they were the last team to defeat the Indianapolis Colts.
Ah, okay. Well, but now that's true to an extent. But then the Colts also didn't play everybody all game long either, did they?
No, that's not true. No, that was a game. No, that was when the Colts were still having their defensive problems, John. Remember late in the season last year, the Colts got beaten. The Colts lost their last four regular season road games last year. I think people forget that. Mm. They were 9-0, but they were, you know, they were only 3-4 down the stretch. They lost at Dallas. They got run over by Vince Young. They got overwhelmingly run over by Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And then Ron Dayne went and stomped them for 153 yards, and Houston beat the Colts for the first time in their history. Now, the intriguing thing is Houston hasn't lost since. That was their jumping-off game. They're 4-0 since. First time in their franchise history, they're not only 2-0, but they've won four games in a row. And funny enough, the Colts haven't lost since. Since that loss, the Colts got hot and wound up winning the Super Bowl. So
wow.
it was a severe test, and I think there is going to be an electric atmosphere in that game on Sunday. And I'm not saying the Houston Texans pull it off. They are really behind the eight ball with the loss of Andre Johnson, who is not going to play in this game.
Right.
And also there's this little guy named Peyton Manning who has absolutely eaten them alive. You know, he has played the Texans 10 times, 2,708 yards. Where do you hear these numbers? 25 touchdown passes and only four interceptions.
Ooh.
But again, the last time they played, Gary Kubiak's system had its way with the Colts defense and was able to control the ball on the ground against them.
Well, that is some intrigue. That's why we bring you on the program, because you set us straight, Russell.
Well, it, like I alluded to earlier, as far as jumping off games, like San Francisco at Denver, I think that Houston game last year for the Houston Texans against the Colts, who wound up in 6-10. They, you know, only 6-10, but they tripled their wins from being a 2-14 team. And I think that confidence has carried over to a little of this last year.
Certainly looks like it. Well, I'm going to be watching that one as best as I can as well on Sunday. San Diego tries to bounce back at Green Bay, and Green Bay obviously is off to a pretty good start for themselves as well. But, you know, so do we figure out if San Diego is as good or as bad as they may have looked this week?
I think this is a very telling game for the San Diego Chargers. They have come out very lethargic offensively this season. They've only scored 28 points. Even more interesting, they've been limited to 14 points in each of their first two games. Last year, they were only limited to 14 points or less once all season, and that was in a loss to the Baltimore Ravens, 16-13. Even in the loss to New England, they scored 21 points. So they led the league in scoring last year, but they look like a shell of that so far this season. They look tentative on offense. An up-and-coming offensive line has been non-existent. I think this is my other game where the intriguing and great atmosphere will be at Lambeau Field. I like the Green Bay Packers to continue their momentum, and I think we're going to be scratching our head about the San Diego Chargers on Monday once again.
I tend to agree with that one. Jacksonville is at Denver. I bring it up simply because Denver struggled with Buffalo in the first week. Jacksonville, to me, is still a little bit of an enigma. So does either team separate themselves from some of the other, shall we say, contending-type teams in the AFC with a win this Sunday?
Well, the Denver Broncos have had few problems moving the football. They haven't necessarily translated into a lot of points. They've always scored 38 points in two games, but well over 400 yards of offense in each one of the two games. The Jaguars remain, to me, the most erratic team in this league. And everybody talks about their defense, which I think is inconsistent at best. And you don't need any better example the first 2 weeks. They gave up 282 yards rushing to the Tennessee Titans. And last week gave up 82 yards rushing. and beating the Atlanta Falcons. So the problem is, though, they can't score. They've scored 23 points in two games. Going into Denver, I think, will be tough for them. Jay Cutler, boy, does he have a live arm or what?
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about early in the year, him and Javon Walker, I think, are going to be one of the great passing combos of the season. They're off to a good start, not necessarily with the touchdowns, but that is his guy. And listen, they got some breaks last week and a really timely timeout by Mike Shanahan to freeze an already Sebastian Janikowski had already kicked the field goal, but that's what upsmanship is all about. And Denver has escaped thanks to Jason Elam 2 weeks in a row. But I think they'll make it 3-0 against, like I said, I think the most erratic team in the league.
All right. I'll bring up this game only because it's the Patriots' next opponent, but obviously Cincinnati is on the road at Seattle this week, Sunday as well.
I'm sorry, John, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but Cleveland just scored again. So
51-45.
Cincinnati just scored again as well.
Yeah, I know. That was an extraordinary game. 96 points scored, and the fact that Cleveland scored 51 of them, it may be even more extraordinary.
Well, even more extraordinary to the fact that it was only 3 years ago that those teams combined for 106 points in a game, the second highest scoring game in history. And the Browns that day scored 48 points and lost by 10. So not a lot of defense being played in Ohio. Well, I wonder how the Buckeyes will do this week.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Maybe the only defense you get. So does Seattle outscore Cincinnati at home?
You know, this is the game I'm really on the fence with. And I fully expect this to be a shootout, too. You've got two very, very capable running games. You've got two very, very capable quarterbacks. And I think you have a Seattle defense that's a little reeling. Last week, I know that the Cardinals only – it took a last-second field goal to do it. But Seattle never really got a grasp on what Arizona was doing last week. And, listen, I know Ken Whisenhunt knows the Seattle defense going back to the Super Bowl. But for his team that struggled on offense in week one to put over 400 yards on the board or on the field against Seattle really kind of surprised me a little. And I think this is going to be a really, really wild game. I think Cincinnati still has to be reeling a little last week from giving up all those points. But here's the key with them. You've got, for them, it's all about takeaways. One of my favorite stats, and I'm only going to do this going back to 2005, and we'll include that playoff game against Pittsburgh. The Bengals have won 20 games since then. In those 20 games, they have 68 takeaways. That's pretty impressive. In the 15 games they've lost, they have 14 takeaways. So they are the ultimate feast or famine when it comes to forcing turnovers. Problem is, if they don't get turnovers, they don't get wins. I'm probably leaning a little towards Seattle only because I think Cincinnati could still be a little shell-shocked, but I think both teams are going to put 30 points on the board.
Yeah, that game is at Quest Field in Seattle. So Seattle at home against Cincinnati. It's a 4:05 Eastern time game on Saturday or on Sunday, and, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals are where the Patriots will travel next week. One other Sunday game, the Sunday night game on NBC, Dallas at Chicago, seems to be at least an intriguing matchup to the extent that, again, we get the Cowboys in a Sunday night situation. But right now, are these the two best teams in the NFC, maybe with all due respect to a team like Washington?
Well, no, I think, well, I don't know about Chicago as much. I mean, I still have my doubts about them. And my doubts have a lot to, like most people do, have to do with their offense. And I don't mean to pin it on Rex Grossman, but he is a turnover machine. He turned it over a couple, he threw two more picks last week. But it's not just Rex. That's the problem. You know, they played San Diego the week before. They turned over the ball four times, John. Only one of them was Rex Grossman. Their running backs fumbled as well. So they are very erratic offense. Their offense in two games has scored one touchdown. And thank goodness for Devin Hester, who had a punt return for a touchdown, had another kick return for a touchdown called back last week, and probably outgained most teams in the league with his returns last week alone. But if you cannot hold on to the football, you're not going to win in this league. That, I think, is the downfall of the Chicago Bears. But I will also say this. This game is about tempo. And if the Cowboys defense doesn't play any better than, I think, the first 2 weeks, okay, and they were better last week, although Chris Chambers was able to maneuver around their secondary, even though Trent Green threw four interceptions. You know, Bernard Berrian is always a 75-yard touchdown waiting to happen. So I think this game will really depends on tempo. I lean toward the Cowboys, but I also know going into the Soldier Field Sunday night, a lot of people watching, that'll be a pretty electric atmosphere. So
your Monday night game is Tennessee at New Orleans, and really, I think New Orleans starting out 0-2 has shocked just about everybody.
Well, just the flatness of what, I mean, they have not played well on defense. They have not played well on offense. Reggie Bush, with all due respect, looks like a windshield wiper. He runs great back sideline to sideline. But until he starts running upfield and becomes a better runner that way. Plus, they just seem like a team right now that on offense that looks like they lack confidence. As strange as this may sound, watching Drew Brees last week, he seems like he's lost a little off his passes. And, you know, to me, the Tampa defense, which is not what it was in the past, for them to be down 28-0 in the third quarter at Tampa Bay, I thought that was more stunning than the second half against the Colts the previous day. So think about this, John. They went a stretch. The New Orleans Saints went a stretch that after 10-10 at the half against Indianapolis, they gave up. Carry the two, about 59 consecutive points without scoring. 31-0 in the second half, and then down 28-0. 59, that's 8 touchdowns and a field goal. You know, that they for a team that's been, you know, more than respectable pick for experts getting to the Super Bowl, they have shown no signs of that whatsoever. The problem is that nobody else in the division is exactly lighting up your socks either.
Yeah, that's true.
And this could be an opportunity for them to get back on field. But my suggestion is forget the Titans and the Saints. Just get, we'll get Reggie Bush back on the field. We'll get Vince Young back on the field. And maybe ESPN, I'll talk to my managers here. They can replay the USC-Texas game from a couple of years ago. And you can't get a better football game than that one.
No, that's very true. That may have been one of the all-time great ones. That will lead us to our game here at Gillette, Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Patriots and the Bills. What kind of a percentage of likelihood do you put on the Bills coming away with a win?
Well, let's see. I don't have any fingers to even figure that out. I mean, I think they'll be really, really hard-pressed here. The Patriots, listen, there is a reason that they, you know, most people think already they're the best team in football. You know, there's already this groundswell that could they go undefeated this year. You know, they took two teams that they beat in the playoffs last season and absolutely destroyed them the first 2 weeks of this season.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly is this is a team that they've owned. They've beaten them 7 in a row and 12 out of 13. And the Bills, especially in their offensive line, don't look like they're improved enough to deal with New England's defense. Last week they had a couple opportunities to make the Pittsburgh game interesting, but they never were able to capitalize. You know, I think that's a team that's treading water and a little disappointing because they look like they were an up-and-comer. But I just can't see where, unless the Patriots turn over the ball 5 or 6 times. Now, I remember last year, and I know I don't have to remind you, opening day last year, the Bills got off to a great start.
Yeah, first play of the game.
Fumble,
yep.
and returned it for a touchdown, and
right.
They had to scratch and win for a 19-17 win, New England. But I just don't anticipate that happening, and unless Buffalo shows me a little more signs of life on offense, I think they're going to be hard-pressed to even score here.
Got a question from Craig in South Carolina who wrote in and says, what are your odds on the Pats running the table at 19-0?
I've said this before, and I will reiterate. I think we'll sooner see a team go winless than we will undefeated again.
So in other words, you say it's not likely.
I don't think it's likely because I think it is incredibly difficult
mm-hmm.
to achieve with the Miami Dolphins Chiefs now going back 35 years. They did it being 14-0 and eventually 17-0. And, you know, the Patriots had that stretch where they won 21
games in a row.
They
yeah.
didn't do
yeah.
it in one season, but
right.
that's an NFL record that might never be broken. If they managed to do it all in one season, it would be absolutely phenomenal. But, listen, there's a lot of landmines out there. They have you know, the Dallas Cowboys. They have if Philadelphia Eagles get their act together, they play them later in the year. And, of course, they got to play the Indianapolis Colts in Indianapolis. So I think something that would be fun would be if perhaps the Colts and the Patriots were undefeated when we got to that game. That would be
yeah.
a game
yeah, I
that
just,
would draw incredible interest.
Yeah, I mentioned that a little while ago before you came on with us, and I said, you know, we looked earlier this week at potential, shall we say, bumps in the road for the Patriots on the schedule, and the first one that really came up was the game at Miami, simply because Patriots usually have trouble in Miami. It's just
right.
traditionally been a tough spot for them to
absolutely.
Play, no matter the strength of the team, and then, of course, The next one that came up was November the 4th against Indianapolis.
But you never know where you can get tripped up. You know, remember the year the Patriots went 14-2 in 2003. And you remember, I guess it's referred to as the Lawyer Malloy game when they lost 31-0.
Right.
They were a 2-2 football team before they ran the table and started what would eventually become 21 consecutive wins. Does anybody remember who was the last team to beat New England in the 2003 season?
The last team to beat New England?
That season. It's a good little trivia, but when I say it, I think it'll catch you very much by surprise.
In 03.
In 03, the last team to beat them that year, and of course, then they went on and won, 15 straight games, and then mm-hmm. their first six the following year.
Right off the top of my head, I don't recall.
It was the Steve Spurrier's Washington Redskins.
Oh, of course. Of course.
And I think people would be hard-pressed to go, whoa, it's Steve Spurrier. No, you know, they weren't very good when he was there the whole time. And
that's
yeah,
right.
They beat the Patriots in Washington, and that was the last game. They were a 2-2 team after four games. And then, of course, they ran the table after that. So you just absolutely never know what could happen.
Wow. Russell, that's why we keep bringing you back.
Thank you.
Awesome stuff. Now, how's everything at home? Everything okay? Getting any sleep?
No, but that's
good.
Okay.
Good. Well, we like that. That's good.
The fact that I'm not getting any sleep means that we're doing a good job.
That's absolutely correct. For those that don't know, Russell and his wife just brought a baby daughter into the world a few weeks ago, and so we have to catch your temperature, make sure that, you know, life is still good in the Baxter household.
Absolutely. She is already in charge. She's already given me an allowance, and I will be picking up her car in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Get used to the sound. I'm sure you're used to
it
already.
I am used to that sound. The problem is I'm kind of used to it around here. For various reasons, which I won't get into, but
no.
When it comes out in 5 years, it's a whole different story.
That's exactly right. Russell, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, John. Have a great weekend.
Always appreciate it. Thank you. You too. That's Russell Baxter, the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, as he visits with us each and every Thursday right here inside the Patriots Playbook. We want to go right to Dick Geron? Okay, we'll go right to Dick Geron. Let me set the table again for you as we're in hour number two of the playbook today. We are selecting our nickname for the Patriots offense. The selections again, BMW, Precision Offense, Brady's Bombers,
what?
BB's Guns, Rolling Thunder, Wicked Pissas, Boston TD Party, and the Firing Squad, which Russell liked. BB's Guns was my favorite. We've read some of the votes already. We still have time for you to vote for your favorite, and then we pass it on to the PFW guys and see if it can't catch on a little bit. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. Vote for your favorite. You can also write in another candidate if you haven't heard it mentioned as well. If you got that really clever one that you're just waiting, like Craig in South Carolina, who's just never going to give up here, Gary.
Lawrence Boney Maroney.
No, not that one. He says, how about Brothers in Arms? I don't know, Craig. I don't know. He's thinking. No, okay, not going to do it. All right. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's go to the
conference
call.
What do you mean me? You're the host of this. I'm washing my hands of this.
You're the one that's offered your editorial comment on most of Craig's and some of the other selections that we've done this over the last 2 days. You know?
But you're looking to me for approval.
No, I just, because you've been willing to offer your, you know. That's what I mean. You're the one with the trigger finger over there, so I don't have the control over that. You do. That's why I look to you.
Don't lie to the listening audience. You're the one that has the blow-up
button. No! I have no buttons here. The only button I have is this one that turns off my microphone. This one that turns off my microphone is what I said. That's the only one I have. That's the only button, only thing I can control. All right, let's go to the conference calls. Members of the Patriots media visiting with Bills head coach Dick Geron.
Oh, couldn't be better.
Good.
Couldn't be better.
I have Coach Geron sitting here just waiting to speak with you, gentlemen.
Fantastic. Fabulous.
Okay. Here you go. Hello.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right, but I've had better days.
Yes, I'm sure that's the case. By the way, how is Kevin doing and... what's the plan? I understand they're talking about moving him to Houston or to Texas someplace.
Well, in response to the latter part of that question, you know, all of our medical updates, and I would consider that an update, will come from our doctors. They haven't said anything since Monday, so I'll wait to hear on that one. In terms of Kevin, really, to this point, since the accident, he's really made tremendous progress, and he just gets a little bit better every day, and that's what we're all hoping and praying continues, you know, on into the future. So we're optimistic, we're cautiously optimistic about where it's going, and his family's been unbelievable, you know, they've been unbelievably supportive of us, and hopefully we've been as supportive of them. They've really shown a lot of character here through this thing. So anyway, it's going as well as you could expect after that, you know, after the injury.
How has it affected the team? How has it manifested itself?
You'd probably have to ask 80 or 100 different people that question. You know, there's no way to get away from the fact that it has affected us all, and will continue to. You know, we're part of him, and he's part of us, and we're kind of living through this thing together. So it's affected everybody. I couldn't say all universally the same. You know. But it hasn't been the easiest thing. But I'll tell you, Kevin's been unbelievable, as I said, and his family has been too.
Getting to your ball club, you rocky start. Certainly, you had a tight one in the first game and a Pittsburgh game that was pretty tough last week. What kind of progress do you see, and what needs to be amended to move to the next level?
Well, there's no doubt that we need to play a lot more consistently in every area, you know, to have any chance to play with the Patriots. They're awfully talented, and Pittsburgh's a very talented team too. And the game, our defense really fought. Well, the whole team fought hard. There was no problem there with effort, but we just didn't execute at the level that we needed to challenge, you know, teams of this caliber. Pittsburgh and New England. So we've got a ways to go. Luckily, we've got a real good group of guys that are not afraid to work. You know, they work at it. So they're back to work today, and we'll continue to try to prepare as best we can and see what we can do.
Dick, on Monday, I think it was Monday, we saw comments from down here from Lozman saying that he thinks the offense should be more aggressive or less conservative or whatever the case may be. What was that about, and how's that been addressed?
Well, first of all, JP, in just the way that you gave me the question, he's never said anything like that.
I know.
He certainly never said anything like that in private. And you've been around enough to know how it's, I think the right word might be extracted after a game where people are frustrated. But there's no issues. There are no issues there, except the fact that we all have to do a better job. And it starts with me. I've got to prepare them better and give them better opportunity to win, and then they'll need to execute better. And we've all just got to improve.
He's got a good running back to work with, it looks like, in Lynch. Although a rookie, he's been pretty impressive, I would think, so far.
He's a real good football player. There's no doubt about it. He'll just get better too. There were, like all of us, last Sunday, there were situations where he could have done a little more, you know. And I think that he will as time goes on and he gets more experience and sees things and how they operate in the National Football League. But very very solid guy, very hard worker, and he's talented. So. We've got something to build on, you know, in a lot of areas, but that one kind of stands out. We hope it just keeps growing like that.
Generally, preseason pundits, you know, they have certain visions of certain teams, and they don't always come to pass. But certainly in the case of the Patriots, two wins of 38-14, they already have a two-game lead in the division. They really are playing like a team possessed and a team that has to be considered as a Super Bowl major contender.
No, there's no doubt. You know, there's no doubt about it, but hey, this is not news. This is a team that's won three out of the last six, unless I'm mistaken. And they're awfully, awfully talented football team, and they're coached well. You know, they're put together well, and they know what they're doing. So they pose a problem for anybody, and certainly they pose a huge obstacle for us.
Coach, when you look at their defense, they obviously can attack you in a lot of different ways, but can you just talk about the two outside linebackers for a minute, Vrabel and Colvin, and what challenges they will present to you defensively this week?
To anybody, they present, in a lot of situations, they present size mismatches. You know, certainly if you get them on your running back or even your fullback, they're both excellent pass rushers, both very smart players, you know, and when you watch them on tape, they understand the game. They have a nice feel for the game, a run-in pass, and certainly they have a knack for pressuring the passer and a real knack for locating the ball in the passer's hand and getting it out. So really, really good outside linebackers.
How does Adelis Thomas change your defense from last year? What does he bring to it?
Multiple skills inside. Tremendous pass rusher with size. Again, you can get that same mismatch inside with a linebacker on your back, depending on what you're doing offensively, and that's a big advantage for them and a big advantage for him. He's also, there's no need to tell you. I mean, you saw him perform in the pass game. Gets his hands on the ball. He got his hands on a number of balls. Intercepted the ball. Scored with the ball. You know, so he's just a very big, very fast athlete that's got a feel for the game. So brings another dimension to them inside and in their sub-package.
Coach, how does Randy Moss look now compared to the when you saw him when you were with the Bears?
Same guy, different number, unfortunately.
Brady certainly has a broader range of receiving talent than he had last year, doesn't he?
I mean, there are a lot of new faces there, and he certainly did okay a year ago, you know. So, as you pointed out, the start to their season makes everybody that was predicting them as a super team look like they're right. Of course, I'm not sure how far on the limb they were going, considering their past history as a super team, but awfully talented team playing at a high level, you know. As I said, an unbelievable challenge for us.
How do you get Lee Evans on track?
Same thing we were talking about earlier. It's got to be a function of the whole offense. You know, we've got to execute at a higher level in every area. You know, every area. And when we do that, then we'll give some people some trouble in terms of what they want to do. If they don't have any options that they have to take away, you know, then it's hard to get the ball to Lee because they can just take him away. And hopefully we'll grow into that, and it would be best if it happened quickly, obviously.
Is he your Randy Moss, in a sense, that he's a guy who can attack defenses deep?
Yeah, he's been our threat that can stretch a defense, you know, and make you fear him over the top, which obviously then opens up a lot of those underneath things.
What do you like about, I mean, I know you said that JP, you didn't read JP's comments as criticism. A lot of people externally read it as criticism of Steve Fairchild. What do you like about Steve and what he's done with the offense last year and so far this year?
In terms of JP's comments, though, I didn't interpret him only myself. You know, I talked to the people that were there for our team and heard the comments made. And so it wasn't just my own interpretation, not being on the spot. I talked to a number of people that were on the spot that said he wasn't criticizing. Talked to him, he said he wasn't criticizing me either. Steve Fairchild, I like his creativity, you know. I like the fact that he does have a background in both a hard-nosed run game from the college football point of view at Colorado State, and been exposed to the down-the-field passing game with Mike Martz. And he's a bright guy, he's a good guy, and a hard worker. So there's a lot of things to like there, you know, high character, and has an idea of what we want to do, and clearly we've just got to execute it better.
How much of an offense success, I mean, I know this is a tough put percentage on it, how much is offensive play calling and the coordinator, and how much of it is
Oh, I would never. I would never venture to put that, you know, on any of us. I just think we all got to improve here.
Do you think Lynch could? So far, he's your main. Obviously, he carries the ball more than anybody. Lozman is the second leading rusher.
Mm-hmm.
But do you see him as a heavy-duty back, the one that you can get into a mode where you can control games with him down the road?
Well, we'd like to get in that situation, and we don't see any reason to not have him function in those situations, except for the fact that as you get on in the season, the carries might accumulate. And so, you know, there. I guess what I'm saying is, he's good enough to do that, strong enough to do that, certainly tough enough to do that. Hopefully we'll get into those situations, whether we'll use him there, you know, as the guy in those situations. I wouldn't say that at this point. You know, we'll have to wait. But we are concerned when we do get to the point where we've got a chance to consistently win that we do not wear him out, you know, over the course of a year. So we need to get... We would like to run the ball a little bit more by committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens only when you're successful, you know, because right now we're not successful enough to really have the opportunity to run it enough, you know, and then to run the game out. So we'll face that as we get to it. But that would be my only consideration for not using him all the time was just, you know, it's a long season in this league.
Coach, with all the offensive weapons the Patriots have, how important is a guy like Kevin Falk, who's you know, overlooked by you know the fans and stuff, but certainly adds something to this team?
Oh, he sure does. Yeah, he's not overlooked by us. He's always been a big weapon in their offense, in their sub-offense, and in their base at times. But he does a terrific job and has for a long time. It's a real nice feel for what they're trying to do and also for what defenses are trying to do. You can't say enough. He fits right in, unfortunately, with all their other, you know, all their other outstanding players.
How is the new-look offensive line working out?
Our offensive line, I have a lot of faith in. And, I believe over time they'll just get better. The longer they can stay together in there, they're young enough that hopefully we can keep them together a long time. I think they'll be a real fine offensive line. So I'm happy with their development. As happy as you can be, you know, when you're 0-2 and looking to get anything started, you know. But I think they've done a pretty good job.
You have some. I mean, this is in some ways a vastly different defense than what you brought in here last year. Could you talk about the three guys that you just had to replace in the season, DeGiorgio for Wire, Leonard for Simpson, and Ubedy for Webster. You know, how does that change your approach on defense, or what do those guys bring to the table?
Well, our approach doesn't change that significantly. You know, it changes in a minor fashion from game to game, but actually losing Brian Denny and Anthony Hargrove, Keith Ellison, Coy, and Jason, and then Coe, you know, has definitely hurt us. There's no way to dodge that one. And not just on defense, unfortunately, it's hurt us also on our special teams area, because you've got to replace people, you know, and it just gets hard to replace all those guys. But that's the kind of the nature of our league. I mean, everybody's got injuries, and we've got to find a way to play better over these injuries.
Anything else, guys?
How is Ubedy doing at corner?
He had a real good training camp. You know, came a long way. Last season, you know, he did not get much experience because of the tragedy in training camp when he lost his mom. Really lost about 2.5 to 3 weeks of camp. So really never caught up, and he came out of college early. We really like his development. I think he's going to be a fine player. He's still got a lot of development in front of him, but he's working hard.
How daunting is it? I know it's only week two, but to look at the Patriots getting off to the start that they're off to, especially offensively,
And know that they're the team that you guys have to find a way to get past if you wanted to win the division?
Well, it's a challenge, if that's what daunting means. You know, it's definitely a huge challenge for us and everybody else in our division. But it's not, you know, it's not anything. We knew it was going to be a challenge going in. Our divisions, we think our division's a pretty good one. You know, it's an outstanding division to play in. It's got great rivalries. We like all that, but it's tough. You know, it's tough, and it's not getting any easier, that's for sure.
Anything else, guys? Very good. Thank you, Dick.
That's Dick Geron, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, visiting with members of the Patriots media on conference call earlier here at Gillette Stadium. John Rook back with you here in hour number two of Patriots Playbook for Thursday and, shall we say, webradio@patriots.com. The email address again. Keep your predictions for Sunday's game coming, and we're about ready to select a winner in the Name the Patriots Offense contest here. This one comes from Kent, who says, I vote for the firing squad. That was also Russell Baxter's favorite, so a couple of votes for firing squad. Catherine votes in hi there, I vote for OMD, offensive mass destruction. And then she also says, an unrelated question, what did you think of T.O.'s end zone video camera impression, which he just got fined for, actually? Considering how tense things have been, I thought it was funny. A little levity for a change. Yeah, I kind of did, too. I mean, you know, honestly don't pay a lot of attention to Terrell Owens, but if you hadn't seen it, he hid behind a little goalpost after a touchdown and held the football up and then rolled his hands like, you know, he's rolling a camera and hid behind the goalpost, indicating that there was a little secret videotaping going on. Kind of funny, but the league didn't like it. They fined him $7,500. But he says that he got the idea from callers to his weekly radio show in Dallas. He says, no, he's going to have to be more careful, though, with what he does, especially when it comes to fan suggestions, because his quote is, nothing's worth getting a fine for. He says he'll consider an appeal, but it may not even be worth it. Okay. Thanks, T.O. Thanks for that, by the way. Let's see what else we have. A couple of others here. Van writes from Falmouth, Maine. He says, my vote is for Brady's Bombers. Thank you. Here comes Lawrence, who is from West Lynn, Oregon, but he's originally from Wareham, Mass. And I'm going to read this because I think it's funny. He says, guys, I'm a Colts fan, but I'd like to help create a name worthy of the Patriots. The name should be a combination of the speed of the new offense, the spirit of the coach, and the unique accent of the area. So since Jaguars is already taken, after much thought, I came up with the Cheetahs. Good luck this week when it comes to being Cheetahs. You are the best. And he says, is it true that Roydney is doing an interview on WHGH tonight? Very funny. Gary, do you have something you have a little something for Lawrence?
No, I actually thought that was pretty good.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that is funny. Thomas writes back in and insists that it's all about the New Englanders, the hardcore bunch. It's either the wicked piss-up hats or the Brady's long balls. He says, BB's guns is a little weak. Well, okay, you're entitled to your opinion, but right now BB's guns leads in the clubhouse with the firing squad making a late run along with Brady's Bombers, tied for second right now. So seeing as we have approximately 25 minutes left in the program, we're going to get to Marshawn Lynch, who is the Buffalo Bills rookie running back, in his conference call, and we also have Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, probably means that we need to begin to wind this thing down. So if you have your thoughts and you haven't yet voted, once again, here are the suggestions. BMW, standing for Brady, Moss, and Welker, BMW Precision Offense, Brady's Bombers, BB's Guns, Rolling Thunder, Wicked Pisses, Boston TD Party, and Firing Squad, the Firing Squad. Those are your suggestions. Those are the ones that were sent in that we made the cuts on yesterday. BB's Guns leads by just a slim margin right now over Firing Squad and Brady's Bombers. Your votes count. Webradio@patriots.com. Send them in. Now let's get off to conference call number two. Time for that one? Yeah, let's do that. And members of the Patriots media visiting with rookie running back of the Bills, Marshawn Lynch.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Marshawn. How are you?
Doing pretty good. And yourself?
I tell you what, couldn't be doing any better than we are right now, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Let me ask you about your future, because you so far your present has been pretty good as far as you working in as a rookie, and how much more do you got to go in terms of feeling 100% comfortable with the offense?
You said being 100%.
Yep, ready for, with that offense, to, you know, to feel as comfortable as a veteran can feel.
Oh, well, I feel that comfortable, that comfort level, you know, comes with, you know, just repetition. So, you know, you practice every day. So, I mean, I feel, you know, with the right amount of practice and you know,
You were the second running back taken, and you replaced some McGahee, and they've had some good running backs at Buffalo over the years. What did they say your role was going to be this year? You're going to step right in and get some heavy work?
Well, that was the overall point. But I mean, you know, just mainly, you know, getting in there in situations where, you know, I will feel, you know, the most comfortable. You know, as far as, you know, learning the offense, but I mean, you know, had a pretty good camp, and, you know, I came along, so, you know, therefore I'm able to do, you know, do a lot of the things, you know, that they ask of as far as, you know, blocking and running and, catching the ball.
Do we ask Dick Geron just, moments ago about, down the road, could you be the kind of, running back that carries the ball a heavy load and kind of dictate what the offense does? Do you think you could do that?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to hear you in here because it's kind of static. Let me step into another area 1 second, please.
Sure.
Hello?
Hi, how you doing, Michonne?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
much better.
Do you think down the road you can be a heavy-duty back for this team, and which will help their offense immensely, obviously, in ball control?
Yeah, I mean, I feel, you know, I am and taking that role, but, I mean, you know, there's a lot of great running backs that we have, and Anthony Thomas and Dwayne Wright. So I mean, you know, it'll be good for me too. But I mean, we got a lot of other talent, you know, in the backfield that'll be helping me out. So, you know, that's always good.
And looking ahead to Sunday, you're facing a defense that's probably playing as good as any defense in the league. In fact, I think they're ranked number one. Patriots have really shown some pretty good talent on defense in the last two performances in the last two games.
Right.
How do you view attacking that, and how do you feel going against them?
Well, I mean, you know, it's gonna be tough, but basically, I get my mental right for the play, look over the defense, and you know, find out, you know, what kind of defense they run. But I mean, for the most part, you know, I put it all on me and my preparation for the game. Just how I get ready.
What did you, looking at film, what were you
impressed? Well, obviously the quality of that particular conference call isn't exactly outstanding, and I think you kind of get the gist of it anyway. And let's take it a little bit easy on Marshawn Lynch as well, because he's a rookie and he's trying to develop his interviewing skills, to be quite honest with you. At any rate, you got a little glimpse into Marshawn Lynch and what his thoughts are about the Bills offense, the Bills running game, and his role on the team, at least at this stage of the game.
Just want to let everybody know what it's like to be down here.
What do you mean?
That's exactly what the conference call was if you were down there.
That's okay. So there you go. See, Gary's giving you a perfect example. That's what it sounds like all the time. Most of the time, though, we do a pretty good job of trying to get it at least listenable. That, unfortunately, was not one of them, but we'll do a little better with that next week. I actually thought Dick Geron's was fine this week. That one turned out okay. So at any rate, we like to bring it to you like that because we want you to hear the questions from the Patriots media. A lot of times when you hear snippets and clips and sound bites and the like, you know, you don't get the full context of the answer simply because you don't know what the question was to precipitate the answer. So that's why in this particular format and on this particular show,
we play it as is simply because that way you can make your own decisions and your own conclusions. That's the one thing that we have the advantage of doing here that you might not necessarily get listening to a radio station or watching a TV station or certainly getting it somewhere else. So that's one of the advantages you got, one of the advantages you have of listening here on the Patriots Football Network and Patriots.com Radio. All right, back to the emails, because we've had four or five more come in here with some votes, and this is coming right down to the wire, kids. Let me go to Matt from Oregon, who says, "Oh gosh, that's right. I wasn't going to read this one, but now I got to. I'm stuck." It says, "Just a quick note to say that Gary has been on the ball big time lately with the sound bites and his well placed ripping of the rest of you guys. Way to go, Gary! Keep up the good work."
Jackpot.
Is that your brother Matt in Oregon? Uncle Matt in Oregon? Okay. I'll give Gary a little credit, I guess. Very little. Oops, hit the wrong button. Kent writes, "John, I liked what Russell had to say about the firing squad entry. Thanks to Russell. I think there's a couple of cool things about this. Aside from the obvious sadistic side of the entry, it also has to do with the Minutemen of Foxborough Stadium. They fire shots every time the Patriots score," which is true, by the way. "It goes on the idea that the offense is supposed to score and the defense is supposed to keep the other team from scoring, with the exception of the safety, of course. Technically, as soon as the defense recovers the ball, fumble or interception, and attempt to return it for a touchdown, they are on the offensive from the moment they recover the ball, even though the Patriots may not have changed its units on the field. Thus, the Minuteman fires salutary salvos every time the firing squad scores." He says, "Please count me for another one for the firing squad." Okay, Kent, there's a vote for the firing squad. Well, this one comes. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Iorio from St. Catharines, Ontario, votes for BB's Guns. So there's another vote for BB's Guns. Dean in DeBary, Florida, says Brady's Bombers. See, I knew that those would be the three most popular. So, firing squad, BB's Guns, Brady's Bombers, the three most popular nicknames. Another vote for Brady's Bombers. So we're still dead even. Right now, my total, BB's Guns has a one-vote lead over both Brady's Bombers and firing squad. Thomas writes, "Okay, I can see my name clearly sucks." He wrote in the Wicked Pizzas. But he says, "I do like BMW Precision Offense." All right, Thomas, thank you very much. Thomas is definitely doing some serious surfing and emailing today. What do you think? Do we call this now? It's quarter of four Eastern time. We do have to get off to Coach Belichick. Do we call this contest? It's pretty tight.
We'll see if we can get the injury report, and we'll come back and
good idea.
The final.
All right, so we'll get into Coach Belichick right now. So you've still got roughly 15 minutes. I am going to close the voting off at 4 o'clock Eastern time. So that's approximately 15 minutes, 14 minutes from now. In the meantime, if you've got a last-second vote, webradio@patriots.com. Send it in now. And then we'll update you at the top of the hour and let you know what the winner is. In the meantime, here's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Well, first of all, on Buffalo, our thoughts and prayers go out to Kevin Everett, his family, friends, of course, many of whom are on our team that played with him or knew him from the University of Miami and the Bills organization as they deal with that difficult situation. Just in looking, getting ready for the Bills now, this is a game that's a lot different from the first two that we've played. They have a style of play that's very distinct and that'll be hard for us to get ready for in a short period of time. We're going to have to work awfully hard at it this week. Their style of play defensively and offensively, and as good as they are in the kicking game, is just different from what we've seen the last couple of weeks, and it's different from the way we are. So we really haven't had a lot of exposure to those types of things. We're going to have to spend a lot of time getting ready for them. But, defensively, they have an awful lot of quickness. They rotate those defensive linemen, and they keep them pretty fresh in there, and they're fast. They're very active, of course, headed by Schoble. We've always had trouble with him. And the 2-3 techniques, McCargo and Triplett, are both very quick and active players in there. Along with Williams on the nose, their linebackers are fast. And, Whitner is, of course, developing into a good player for him in the secondary. And, of course, we know they're very good on special teams. They've got the best return game in the league with McGee and Parrish. Do a great job blocking, covering with, Aikman and Stamer in particular, Mormon, top punter in the league. So They got a lot of really good players on special teams. They play very well. They're an explosive team there. And, you know, offensively, they've got very good skill players. Lynch has been extremely impressive. Of course, we saw, you know, a lot of him coming out of Cal this year in a draft, but I think he's certainly lived up to everything that everybody said about him and maybe a little bit more in his opportunities this year. And, you know, their receivers are outstanding. Evans, of course, Parrish. You know, Reed, Peerless Price, Aiken in the kicking game. It's a very, very good group. Tight ends are solid, you know, Losman's a very active and athletic quarterback. So I think they've upgraded their offensive line with the addition of, you know, Dockery and Langston Walker. Butler's come along for him inside. So, you know, that's a pretty solid group there. Of course, headed by Peters, who's, you know, one of the most athletic tackles in the league. He's developed into really a good player, you know, one of the best tackles we've seen. So, good football team, you know, team that had Denver beat, you know, lost a tough game there on the last play. And you know, last week against Pittsburgh, I thought defensively their ability to play well in the red area and keep Pittsburgh out of the end zone, you know, kept the game, you know, very competitive. And then, you know, Pittsburgh got a couple, you know, scored right there at the end. It kind of moved it away from them, but you know, it was really a pretty competitive game, and their red area defense was very good. So you know, it'll be a big week for us in terms of preparation this week, and you know, trying to get some things practiced and looked at that are, like I said, a lot different than what we do and a lot different than what we've seen in the first couple weeks of the regular season, even going back into preseason. It's been quite a while since we've seen a team with this kind of speed and quickness. You're asking about our line?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think our entire offensive unit has played with some degree of consistency. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be better, but yeah, I think that they've been together, been pretty consistently been together here for, you know, quite a while. I mean, it's the same guys that were on the team last year, and you know, they handled some tough situations in the first two games relative to looks and pressure defenses and things like that. You know, for the most part, we got most of them picked up. But you know, it's a hard working group, and they have a hard working coach, and you know, they come to practice every day and usually leave the field a little bit better than when they started. So that's positive. You know, we didn't really talk too much about it then. We were just too busy trying to get the whole thing done. So, Randy and I've talked, you know, we talk quite a bit, you know, football. But, you know, I have a lot of conversations with the players, and that's player-coach conversations, and keep those between the player and the coach. I always keep them between the player and the coach. It's, you know, we talk about things that are important, and that's the way it is with all the players.
Coach, it's still early in the season, but a lot of people, just here locally, but across the country, are talking about the potential for the season. Is that something you welcome,
striving
for,
on the
as a team?
It's sort of so ridiculous. Seriously, is anything else? We need to go out and have a good practice today. That's what we need to do. It's what I just got through saying. We need to get ready for Buffalo. It's a lot for us to handle, something we haven't seen much of, and that's what we need to do. We need to go out and have a good practice and get ready for Buffalo. It's so ridiculous. I think they're well coached. They got good players. They execute well. You know, they got very good coverage. They got good specialists. It always starts there. You know, you can't really be good on special teams if you don't have good specialists, kickers, returners, snappers, holders. You know, all the key positions. They have a good group of core players that go with them. They're well coached. They play consistently well. I mean, they show up every week. They return kicks against everybody. They cover them well. You know, most teams, obviously all teams, when they punt the ball, they have the two outside guys, and they're the gunners. You know, Sam Aiken's like having a third gunner. It's like, you know, it's like you're playing three gunners. You know, you really need to. you really need to double-team him. But you can because you just don't have enough guys, or if you double them, then you let too many guys in the middle run free, like guys like Stamer, guys like that. So it's hard to get them all blocked in the return game. They're aggressive. The returners handle the ball well. They're hard to tackle. You know, Parrish and McGee have two different, completely different running styles, but they're both very, very effective with the styles and the skills that they have. So they're tough. They create a lot of field position. They're right at the top of the league in field position where they usually are in terms of their starting point and where they back you up to. You know, Mormon can change field position with one kick. You know, he's easily capable of, you know, 55, 60-yard net punts with the coverage that they have. So they're tough. They're very tough. Randy's, I think he's a very good leader. I think he does a good job on and off the field. Works hard, smart, is on top of everything, wants to do well. That's what it's all about. I think having that kind of attitude, working hard, trying to get everything right, doing things the way they're supposed to be done, to me, that's what leadership is.
Coach, you mentioned the changes to the offensive line for Buffalo. Mm-hmm. In the past, you've had success in pressuring their loss and enforcement from stage. What kind of challenges?
Well, I mean, that's they brought in a couple of experienced guys, you know, and Walker and Dockery. Butler's, you know, a young kid that's playing well for him, you know, to go with Fowler and Peters. As I said, Peters is really, you know, an anchor, a stalwart on that line. But they're very big. I mean, this is probably physically as big as any line in the league. I can't imagine them being any bigger. And, you know, and they're athletic, you know, as Peters is, as Walker is. So they're big, they're strong. They got a back that doesn't need much room, and a quarterback who's very mobile, very athletic. So sometimes even when they get pressure on Losman, he can get away from it. He's fast. He's quick. He throws well on the run. He's made a lot of big plays scrambling out of there. So that'll be a challenge for us. Talking about Taylor and Thomas. Thomas is playing inside linebacker for us for the most part. Taylor is almost exclusively an outside linebacker. So, I mean, you're looking at him a lot of, you know, different. I think Thomas has a lot of good skills. He's strong. He's a very powerful guy. He's explosive. He runs well. I mean, we all know that. He's smart. He works hard. He studies. You know, he won one of our off-season awards coming in here, and you know, we don't have too many guys that do that. I mean, Welker did it too, but I'm just saying, for the most part, you know, the guys that are here work pretty hard and they're very competitive, and it's unusual to have a guy come in and do that. So I think that speaks a lot to his work ethic, his dedication, and also, you know, his skill, and that's shown out on the field from day one. He's very attentive. He's team-oriented. He understands defense as well. He understands different, not only what he's doing, but what other people are doing, and you know, how that all fits together, and how he can do things to help other people out in the scheme of the defense. You know, he's a smart player. He's instinctive. It's been great to work with.
Coach, Coleman, after Sunday's game, said he felt that game production-wise probably his best there, but felt that he was still capable of much bigger things. What are you looking to get out of
looking to have him prepare well this week and go out and play well against Buffalo.
You know,
well, I think a lot of our production on defense, at least sometimes, is, you know, depends on the circumstances and the plays that are called. The most important thing for us defensively is to play good team defense and be in position, and then take advantage of those opportunities when, you know, when the plays come to us or we have an opportunity to make plays. So, you know, when you play defense the way we do, it's not designed for one guy to, you know, for this guy to have a lot of production or that guy to have a lot of production. It's designed for everybody to do their job and to play good team defense. And then, you know, where the plays happen, then the people that are there at the point of attack need to make. No question. He played a lot better in a passing game. He worked hard on it, some of the things from the Jet game we talked about. I think he worked hard in practice to correct them, and I think they showed up in a more productive and positive manner in the San Diego game. And, you know, that'll be a new challenge this week because certainly the skill level of the Buffalo receivers and their passing game is a little bit different than the San Diego or the Jet passing game. So it'll be a new challenge this week, and, you know, we'll have to work. I don't even want to say just as hard. We'll have to work harder on it this week because of the skill level and the ability of the receivers, and I don't mean just the wide receivers, but the receivers, tight ends, you know, the entire passing game that Buffalo puts out there. They've got a lot of really good players, and, you know, we've all seen Fairchild's offense and how explosive they can be getting the ball down the field. And, you know, Evans last year, you know, whatever it was, 1,300 yards or whatever he had. You know, they're tough.
Bill, has Lawson made strides in your mind from what you've seen in the last year?
I think he's a good quarterback. He's got good athletic ability, as I said, good arm. He's got a good touch on the ball. You know, he's got good quickness in the pocket and to do things like bootlegs and, you know, run plays like that. So, yeah.
So you mentioned some of the guys knew Kevin Everett. Talk to any of them about, you know, his injury?
Well, I think we're all, you know, like I said, our prayers and thoughts are with him, his family, and the entire Bills organization as they go through the process. We have a lot of players on this team from the University of Miami. But, I mean, even if we didn't, we'd still, you know, I mean, feel the same way. It's an unfortunate situation, and as much as we can mentally and emotionally support him, I mean, that's what we do. I mean, obviously, it's a competitive game that he's not going to be a part of, but, I mean, still our, you know, we care about him as a fellow competitor and, you know, a player in the league or another coach in the league.
Bill Belichick earlier today at Gillette Stadium with members of the Patriots media. We are still a couple of minutes away from getting the updated injury report, so looks like that's going to get to us after 4 o'clock Eastern time. So I would suggest here in the next couple of moments, if you are that interested in the updated injury report, that looks like it just came across. All right, we'll hold on to it here for a moment. In the meantime, the votes are in for our nickname for the Patriots offense that we've been doing over the last couple of days. Yarek sends this email and he says, BB Guns, by the way, is the name of a voluptuous stripper. Okay. I don't think I was aware of that, but I will assume that you're okay with that. Yeah, exactly. Brian writes for the firing squad. Let's see. Nate in Pittsburgh, but originally from New England, says, guys, I think they're all pretty lame. Wish I'd heard you earlier in the week to submit my own suggestion, which would probably be equally lame. That being said, I have to vote for the least lame of them, which is Brady's Bummers. Keep up the good work. Love to hear Patriots talk radio out here in the heart of Steeler country. Thank you, Nate. Well, with that one, that puts us all in a dead heat between BB's Guns, Brady's Bummers, and Firing Squad. Henry writes, Henry from the other England, I assume, over the out on the other side of the pond. You guys were talking about coaching the other day. What do you think of Mike Tomlin? No Bill Belichick, but he still has got potential. Almost forgot the Patriots are superb right now. Looking forward to the Colts game. Well, getting a little ahead of ourselves, Henry. But, yeah, Mike Tomlin is, I think he's one of those assistants that has come on strong in the last few years based on what his team that he worked for has done, which being Pittsburgh, and has learned under Bill Cowher rather well. So far, you'd have to say, obviously, he's got a great start to his career. He's won his first couple of games, but you have to consider overall, I think, the caliber of opposition. But I'm glad to see an assistant of Tomlin's caliber get an opportunity to lead his own team as opposed to being, you know, having somebody in that position sort of recycled from another team. I think that's a step in the right direction. Let's see. Here we go. Bob in New Hampshire. I have to vote for Firing Squad. Brady's Bombers sounds too much like he only throws bombs, and that simply is not true. But we do have a firing squad on the home sidelines, as someone did point out by someone else. Tom throws bullets, not BBs. Okay. Thank you, Bob in New Hampshire. And then Craig says, okay, well, then Firing Squad it has to be. Well, if your boy Craig says it, Gary.
Now I have to change my mind.
Well, it looks by like by a mere one vote, firing squad wins right at the end, right at the wire here at 4 o'clock Eastern time. So, okay, Patriots offense is known as the firing squad. Going to pass that off to PFW and see if we can't. We'll start referring to it here on the program and see if we can't, you know, try to incorporate it in some form or fashion. Now, I think I have the original email on this one from yesterday. As to who actually came up with that nickname. Or is that one of the ones that got thrown away? I have to look real quick. Can't remember. I think I still have it. Anyway, I'll look for it. But firing squad it is. So thank you for everyone who took the time to vote and contribute with your votes. Oh, there we go. Injury report. Thank you. The injury report update. Patriots did not had everybody participate today. They did have limited participation from Kyle Brady, Randy Moss, Dante Stallworth, David Thomas, Stephen Neal, Tom Brady, Kelly Washington, Eugene Wilson, Mike Wright, and Billy Yates. So those players limited participation practice, but they did not have anybody who sat out completely. The Bills today. Let's see, did not have Sam Aiken or Terrence McGee practice. Limited participation by Brad Butler, and they did have full participation from Josh Reed and Ashton Yabuti. So that's the update on their injury report. But nobody listed, Ryan Denny and Keith Ellison are out, along with Coy Wire, out for this week. So that is official by the Bills today. Update on the injury report. Thank you for your participation. Lots of fun this week. We'll pass on the firing squad to the PFW fellas. And, hey, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next Tuesday as we recap the game with the Buffalo Bills and look forward to On the Road at Cincinnati. Until next time, so long, everybody.